You wrote that since the death of Antonin Scalia, the biggest issue not being discussed is the way federal judges leave their lifetime appointments. Now, obviously, Scalia did not choose to leave his Supreme Court post, but he was eligible to retire with full benefits. Let's begin by explaining the rule of 80 and how this could be used to make the court look less political than you say it really is.
Yeah, these departure decisions that the justices make are political. Scalia even admitted this in a recent interview, the first justice ever to admit that justices are partisan in their retirement decisions. And it does have to do with this rule of 80, this idea that once you reach age 65, all federal judges, if you have 15 years of service, so any combination past age 65, age plus service equaling 80, you can retire. So Justice Scalia has been eligible to retire since 2001, and so has Justice Kennedy for that matter. But they chose not to retire during the 8 years of George W. Bush's presidency and the 8 years of Barack Obama. Scalia was waiting, right? Justice Kennedy is waiting for a Republican president. Scalia failed in that sense. And now, in hindsight, boy, he should have retired under George W. Bush, shouldn't he have? And then the Republicans could have held his seat and appointed whoever they want. And, you know, it's a failure on his part.
So we've blown apart the notion of judicial impartiality, or at least Scalia did by his yes. own admission. But we are a nation where the rule of law is the cornerstone of public life. How would you make the high court and other federal courts less political?
With regard to these departure decisions, changing maybe that rule of 80 to a rule of 100, thereby narrowing the window with which justices can time their departures. Instead of giving justices 10, 15, 20 years with which to time it, we could up the retirement age to 70 or 75 or even 80 with a certain combination of years of service, and that would take away this long window and this partisan process.
What's a reasonable term for a Supreme Court justice?
Scholars have said that 18 years would be a reasonable term. You've got nine justices. If you had staggered terms, and then there'd be two seats that might come up for every 4 years of a presidency, and you could have those in off years, so it's not during a presidential election year and not during a midterm election year, to take the politics out of the retirement decision and the confirmation, at least to the extent that you can in terms of elections. There will always be politics and confirmations, but less so than there are now if you were to do something like that.
Well, the reforms you suggest and others have suggested come too late to resolve the current battle over the Supreme Court vacancy. What advice do you have for the remaining eight justices as they return to their current caseload?
A lot of people are making a lot out of this, you know, that the court will be divided on some 4-4 decisions. This is something a lot of people don't understand. 1/3 of their decisions are unanimous, and 2/3 are one dissent or two dissents. So in 2/3 of the cases, Justice Scalia's vote would not matter. An 8-member court will decide those cases, and so the court functions now, and it will decide most of the cases. Now, the ones that might be divided, right, where Scalia might have made the difference, and the vote is 4-4 right now in conference, they'll just reschedule those for argument again next year. And if, again, there's only eight justices and, again, they equally divide, they'll just reschedule it again. They're very reluctant to hand down a 4-4 decision. They might rule more narrowly on a case that they might have ruled boldly with a 9-member court with a 4-4 division. They might take a narrow ruling, perhaps a jurisdictional ruling, a standing ruling, something like that, to avoid the larger issue until there are 9 members. And trust me, there will be 9 members. It may take us a couple years, but there will be 9 members. And the court takes the long view of these things. Yeah, we can't decide these issues right now, but we'll get to them eventually.
Let's return to the politics just outside the Supreme Court. What are your thoughts on the constitutional duty of the president to nominate a replacement for Antonin Scalia? And what are your thoughts on the duty of the Senate to give a fair hearing?
There's a lot of misinformation and a lot of politicians being disingenuous about this process. The Senate's constitutional responsibility to consent or to, you know, to vote on that or whatever. But that's not the case. The Senate's responsibility is advice and consent. So the Senate can weigh in and advise the president on who they think he should nominate and if they think he shouldn't nominate. Now, he can go ahead and nominate, but the Senate has every authority under the Constitution to not act on it. And historically, the Senates have not acted on various Supreme Court nominees for various reasons, including most recently, at least in presidential election years, 1968, when Earl Warren famously tried to retire at the end of LBJ's term in fear that Nixon might become president, and Republicans filibustered and stopped that, and we waited, and Nixon did indeed win the election and become president. So there's much precedent for this. Are Republicans really going to stop this process? It remains to be seen. They say they are. Obama says he might, well, there's indications he might nominate a moderate, and if he does, it might be more difficult for Republicans to sustain any opposition, and things may change as the months go on, so we'll see.